Hello, welcome to Pod Sing Say, an Avatar The Last Airbender podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jen, joined by my co-hosts Abby, Steph, and Nicole. Every week, we'll be rewatching an episode of Avatar and discussing it here. For today's episode, we're going to be discussing the 15-minute unaired pilot and some info about the initial development of the show. But before that, some introductions are in order. Like I said, my name is Jen, Jen Hurler. I'm a big animation fan, I went to school for it, have worked on some feature films, and have done freelance work for Cartoon Brew. I also run my own animation blog and YouTube channel, animationcomplex.com. Also, I am a firebender. I first started watching Avatar when it first aired, so I was like 15, I was a freshman in high school, I was still in love with cartoons, and I was trying to keep it a secret from everybody except for the other kids in anime club, and I remember seeing commercials for this show and being kind of confused and intrigued by this, like, weird American anime kind of thing, and then watching the series premiere and being absolutely blown away by it. It's because of shows like Avatar that I do want to tell stories and see more nuanced and complex storytelling in animation. I was lucky to have friends in college that I met, these three, who shared that love of Avatar. So I'm really excited to drag my friends from college into this project with me. So I'll throw it over to Abby.
Hi everyone, my name is Abby Nanquil and I currently work and live in New York City. I'm a big TV enthusiast and love to watch various series in my spare time, especially now that we're self-isolating. As a fun fact, during quarantine I finished shows like AMC's Mad Men and HBO's Succession for the first time, along with episodes of Netflix's Terrace House that are only available currently in Japan. So I'm in the market now for something new to watch, so this is great timing. Definitely looking forward to watching another iconic series like Avatar The Last Airbender with you guys.
Hi everyone, I'm Stephanie Kwono. I studied English and Japanese in college and I'm currently working for a Japanese logistics company. So like shipping, but not the fun kind, lol. I started watching Avatar during its first season as a freshman in high school, and I was absolutely obsessed with it all the way up through college, where I dragged Nicole into the fandom our freshman year. I'm honestly really looking forward to this rewatch because this show was such a huge part of my teenage life, and it's always meant a lot to me.
Hi, I'm Nicole Machino. I came to Avatar when I was in college, so I sort of watched it all in one piece instead of as it was airing. And my qualifications for this podcast are that I just really like stories. I really appreciate how they can influence people. And I read a lot of fan fiction. Yeah.
I want to say that we are totally dating ourselves right now by saying that we were either watching it while it was airing in high school or watching it after it had completed airing when we were in college. I will say that I think probably we have different angles that we're approaching this from. Like, if you were watching it as it was airing, you had all the anticipation of not knowing what was coming next and trying to theorize on what might happen with the knowledge you had. As opposed to if you watch it all in one chunk, then, you know, obviously that's a different relationship with the show than, like, Jen or Steph probably had.
Similarly for me, I don't remember where I was when the series first started, but I do have memories of being weirded out that a U.S. channel is creating its own anime-esque type of series. So I thought that that was really weird, and I was almost suspicious of it, I felt. I think I had tried to watch it as it was airing because I do know I was like vaguely aware of like what was happening, until, yeah, I think then we started college. And then again, that was like when I actually did watch it in full ish, which we'll probably dive into later. But I do have memory of it first starting and I probably did watch a few episodes.
I feel like I don't even know when we found out we all liked it either. It was just like one of those things. We all kind of like the same stuff. So then speaking of all of that, I kind of thought for this first episode, we could talk a little bit about the development of the show. Avatar The Last Airbender was created by Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzko. Mike and Brian met at a Halloween party as students at RISD in the mid-90s. Brian, who was a sophomore, even helped Mike finish his senior film. By 2001, Mike had episode directing credits on shows like Family Guy and King of the Hill, and Brian eventually became the art director for Nickelodeon's Invader Zim. After working on projects, pitching, and failing to get any traction, they opted to work together to come up with an idea for a new show. In 2002, Invader Zim was abruptly canceled, and Brian decided to hold off on looking for another job. He'd make a show or run out of money, whatever happened first. Meeting with Nickelodeon development executive Eric Coleman, the two discussed the desire to make a show with heart and integrity. At the time, Nickelodeon was looking for shows with action and adventure and legends and lore. As Brian says in the Art of Avatar The Last Airbender art book, Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter were two of the biggest things going on in 2002, and Nickelodeon was looking for an answer to that. Adventure, magic, action, lore. Mike and Brian planned to pitch a new idea within a month. The one idea that they had was a sketch Brian had done of a robot monkey with an arrow on its head holding a staff, a balding man in his 40s, and a bipedal polar bear dog hybrid. Brian recalls this was probably inspired partly by Cowboy Bebop, imagining the trio on adventures around space. He aged the human to a kid and gave them an arrow. He also cites Hayao Miyazaki, Asian cultures clearly, and Hong Kong cinema as influences over what eventually became Avatar. Iterations later, he drew the boy as a shepherd with a herd of flying bison, each with their own arrow marking on their head. A yoga class was a catalyst, and before they knew it, they were fleshing out the ideas and they had the very foundations of the Avatar world. They pitched to Eric after only 2 weeks of conceptualizing the show, using a handful of sketches, three color images, and just talking about it for over 2 hours. The whole outline of the show was pitched, with Eric making the critical suggestion that led to Zuko's creation. And I just have to take a second to acknowledge how rare a pitch like this is, especially today. There just seems to be so much red tape and bureaucracy involved even to develop something, and usually there's just so much more involved to a pitch than what these guys pulled off. So they were greenlit, and Nickelodeon commissioned an 11-minute pilot. They created a generic plot to introduce the characters, conflict, and world. Before the pilot was made, only a brief animation test, a pencil test, was made by them and a few friends to try and translate the kung fu they'd been learning from Sifu Kisu into animation. This test was also the first time they used the musicians who'd work on the whole series, known as the Track Team, composed of Jeremy Zuckerman and Ben Wynn. This test also helped them when reaching out to studios to work on the pilot. Over the following 9 months, they fleshed out the three-season story arc further, as well as characters, resulting in a typical series bible. Theirs being around 65 pages long, with artwork, character descriptions and designs, episode ideas, and more. They handed the show bible and the script for the pilot over to Nickelodeon, who again greenlit the pilot. That was 2003. To actually make the pilot, they also had to storyboard it and find an animation studio. They'd heard of a studio called Tin House, reached out, and even went to Seoul in South Korea to visit them. Some of the people they met there ended up working all the way through the series finale. Brian worked alongside them for 4 months, with Mike coming to Seoul for weeks at a time. In early 2004, the pilot was done, screened, and Avatar was picked up for 13 episodes. Because of the huge task involved, they worked with a few animation studios, JM Animation, Dr. Movie, and Moy Animation. Apologies if I pronounced any of those wrong. I believe all of those are also in South Korea. While the designs and storyboards were done in the US and sent to South Korea, Mike and Brian were still eager for their relationship with the studio to be less of a vendor doing a job and more of a collaboration among artists, which I think shows in the final product. It's all of these small decisions that have made Avatar: The Last Airbender such a cultural milestone. When they first announced it was coming to Netflix, the fandom kind of like rose up from the grave and got really excited, at least for me, like what I saw on like Twitter and stuff. So I'm just excited for like new people to discover it too.
Yeah, I'm subscribed to the subreddit, and there was definitely, you know, a lot of excitement that I saw on there. I mean, I have the DVDs, so I can watch it whenever I want.
Yeah.
But I do understand, like, if you don't, it's been hard to have access to it.
I was thinking about that too, because I was thinking about how, for me, I haven't rewatched the show in a very long time, but I've also probably seen every episode of that show like so many times just from catching reruns, and just whenever it's on, you just kind of watch it.
Yeah.
But like, I can't remember the last time I had a proper rewatch, which is also why I'm excited for this. So one of the things that we did to prepare for the show is to rewatch the unaired pilot of Avatar: The Last Airbender. And we all watched it, and I think it's pretty safe to say that none of us have seen it probably legitimately 9 years ago that we watched the bonus features on Stephanie's box set DVDs. What did you guys think rewatching that pilot all these years later?
I mean, what always strikes me when watching pilots as a fan, when you watch an unaired pilot for a show, usually what you are thinking about is how all different it is from the show that you know, all the things that are different, all the things they stayed the same. But what I was trying to do when I watched it this time was remind myself that this would have been what people were seeing as their first introduction to what the show was actually going to be like in general. So I was trying to watch it through that lens of, like, if this is the first thing I'm ever seeing of this show, what do I think?
Mm-hmm. And what did you think?
I mean, obviously, I can't erase my knowledge of what the show is like. So, I mean, I felt like it did show very well things like what general comedic timing would be like in the show when they had... Should I talk about specific details?
I might as well. We're going to link the illicit Facebook video in the description, so...
Okay. So, like, for example, when they were like, oh, we have no idea where he is. He could be hiding anywhere. And then he just popped up right in front of them.
Oh, like, yeah, that was so funny.
So Avatar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was iconic of the thing. Certain elements that I know, obviously, that I was like, oh, this, I recognize, like, the music that plays when Momo's about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they had Momo's like theme. That. I noticed the music was, like, pretty figured out already.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I noticed that, too. I was like, oh, this is, like, the exact, like, I don't, ambiance, like, the musical ambiance is the same.
Yes, I mean, you know, obviously, I was thinking about how they were trying to show in this very brief thing a lot about the world. So they were showing how all the bending sort of works. They established without being very, like, and here is the rules. They established well all of how it goes, water bending, how Aang has air bending, there's the Fire Nation. Another random detail, I loved when Zuko leaped down and fire came out of his nose.
That was such a weird shot, though. I, like, saw that. I was like, this is uncomfortable.
But, no, I felt like they were established a lot. I felt a lot of Katara feeling like she's trying to be a responsible adult, and Aang is this small child that they have to protect because there's mm-hmm. this whole quest where the Fire Nation, they really emphasize the Fire Nation wants to capture Aang mm-hmm. because he's the Avatar, and they have to protect him because he is this, like, important figure or weapon even in this war.
I almost felt like they didn't explain the Avatar well, like, very
they
clearly.
They definitely didn't. They did not.
Yeah, but also, I get why they did it.
Mm-hmm. Even in the intro, it was a little bit different than the one we know from the show. And she says, the Fire Nation attacked, and then there was this person, the Avatar, who learned how to do all four elements, which made him powerful. And now the new Avatar is a child. And that was a little interestingly, it has a little different connotation. But they really put a lot of emphasis on this whole, like, Katara, well, Kaya in the pilot, was very focused on this aspect of the bigger picture, the war, you're too important, you need to stay safe, I'm going to do this, and try to protect him. And they had Aang's general child personality, where he's saying, well, I want to do this, and I like goofing off, and you're important to me, and I like having fun. Even in the beginning when they show water, fire, etc., mm-hmm. with everyone doing a little bending move, and they have Aang at the end, and he's goofing off. So they did sort of introduce that element very well with the war and the child chosen one and everything.
I know you said you were trying to not look at changes, but all I was doing was just like, whoa, this is different! For me, it was the two things that I really liked that they changed was, to your point about Aang being kind of a kid, was I like that they still kept that childlike personality and his innocence and naivety, but I feel like in the actual show, he was definitely more mature than this pilot Aang, because this one was still joking about stuff when it was like, okay, no, it's time to be a little more serious, where it's like he still kind of had an edge to him. Even from the very first episode, he still was like a fully trained master. Like, he was still it wasn't Katara. It was one of those things where Katara, like, made him sit outside on, like, a rock, and I was just like, that's switched, in my opinion, from how the show is. And then I really liked that they changed Sokka's character. I'm glad they opted for kind of the goofy guy instead of the straight man that they kind of had in the pilot.
Yeah.
Because I think we would have just gotten really sick of him really soon. And I'm, like, realizing that there wasn't really any character quite like that
And I'm glad, because I know sometimes there are those characters and I just don't like them, is all. That's just me being biased, though.
That's fair.
Sorry. Another thing that I forgot to say just now is, even though they were emphasizing so much that Katara felt this responsibility to sort of be the authority adult figure who's looking out for this child, Aang, they did have the, you know, like the few jokes about Sokka, like being like, oh, your boyfriend or whatever, to remind us that she, Katara and Sokka, are both also children themselves, but that they're just trying to be adults.
Even that Zuko's a kid too, right?
Yep. Watching it, I was like, you know, I feel like Nicole said, you get a good feel for like what the feel of the show is going to be, this sort of seriousness mixed with humor and whatever. And like that kind of felt the same in a way, but there were a lot of things that I was like, oh, that's just a little off, you know, watching it after having the actual show in my mind. So it was interesting. It kind of felt like slightly off-brand Avatar, but
it's like your Chinatown Avatar. Yeah,
like it's like almost right, but just like a few little things, like especially because like some design elements were different, I feel like, especially with the Fire Nation uniforms and everything. So I was like, oh, it's just like a little off. But I do feel like it was a good way of giving like a screenshot almost of what the characters are like and the feel that the feel that the show is going for.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah, I think I agree. It's like the pilot did its job in telling me like what the world is going to be like. I was waiting for the iconic lines of, and then the Fire Nation attack. Like, that is just like the line, and it was missing. So I know I like chatted you guys, like I need to rewatch some things. And it was me rewatching the introduction several times just because it felt slow.
Yeah.
It's just like water. I felt like 30 seconds passed, and then it was like the martial arts, and I was just like, Earth. And then like the same thing, I was like, I don't think I want to watch this, but it picked up with the narration from like, mm-hmm. randomly, it has to be my grandma telling the story, right? And then, mm-hmm. yeah, it seemed very choppy in that, like, how did they know that this was the Avatar? Just like this random being in the ice. But, you know, I found the plot holes. Like, how do they know? But I had to remind myself, like, they just need to set the stage, and that's what the purpose of this thing is. But one thing that, like, did strike me is, again, that they're also young. Like, why are children in charge of saving the world, mm-hmm. essentially, while Zuko is a child who's trying to, like, take over the world and keep the dominance of the Fire Nation at bay, right? So I'm just like, it's weird to have that burden. So I really felt for them, because just like reflecting on the immense pressure that a child can have can really like impact how they grow up. So I was just like, wow, this is actually really crazy. And just remembering that like the amount of research that they had to put into martial arts to make all of the different nations and their styles, I was like, it reminded me that like a lot of thought went into this, and they had done so well, and it's pretty obvious even from the pilot. So yeah, that was my biggest, like, wow, they actually did a pretty good job for what it's worth.
Yeah, I noticed in the credits of the pilot that, but the Sifu, like the martial arts master who they used as a consultant for the mm-hmm. show, he was mm-hmm. also, he was credited in this as well. So it's like mm-hmm. right from the get-go, but yeah, it's like they were definitely like trying to get it right.
Right.
Yeah.
It was just a random detail that, because when she were talking about the openings, I was like, oh, I noticed also in the opening that Aang was standing in front of like a lion turtle.
Oh, I noticed that too.
Yeah.
I was just like, damn, lion turtle Easter egg, like literally episode zero. Like,
no, I was like, yo, that's that lion turtle, and I don't know how I feel.
Should we explain for the audience what you mean by this? Like, what?
Okay, I don't think we have to. Just, there's lion turtles throughout the show.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, so serious. It's like Hunt for the Hidden Mickey Head. There's lion turtles throughout the show.
Honestly, though, yeah. I mean, it's funny though. I do remember like the first time I did rewatch the show, probably not long after it ended even. Mm-hmm. But I remember it's like you would suddenly see them in like just randomly in backgrounds. It was like such a cool thing, because it was like an Easter egg, you know. But it also goes to show you when they were developing the show, like they had the show is a 3-season show. They pitched it. They knew the entire show.
Right.
Like from the get-go, you know, and it's like they might not have known all of the individual things, but it's like clear, like a beginning, you know, and an end for sure, mm-hmm. that they could set something like that up, like in such a subtle way.
No, I was just gonna say, and obviously as fans, we always love when creators have that much foresight and they're able to put things in so early. Like, even, I know that the example that a lot of people go to and that I go to is in Harry Potter, how Sirius Black gets name dropped in the first chapter of the first book, you know, is just, it's always great for fans when something that we might have overlooked comes back in a major way later on.
Mm-hmm. That's also like an interesting point, because it's like with us, with Harry Potter, like we're also dating ourselves because we also grew up with those books, you know, having to wait years in between releases as well. So like we had all that time to kind of rewatch and like analyze things. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you could argue kind of the same thing for us with Avatar.
The show ended in summer 2008, so we were all about to start college in the fall, and we were all around, like, 18 years old.
Mm-hmm. That it was this thing that, you know, was part of my entire high school life, and at that point, I had friends that I could consistently talk to about it.
Right.
And, like, reanalyze things, and, like, you know, we'd pull notes and be like, oh, did you ever notice this? Each season was, like, 20 mm-hmm. episodes. Season 3 was 21 episodes. So then, for me, I also acknowledged that this show definitely had, like, a higher level of animation than a lot of typical American shows, like especially, you know, just even with the pilot, with the martial arts choreography. And they, like a lot of animation, a lot of cartoons too, they outsource their animation, they specifically to a studio in South Korea. And I think in general too, like this show just like probably had a bigger budget, they took more time, so it like stretched out longer, that like it was all that time.
Right.
It was like one of the first American shows I watched that was like an ongoing show. And I remember for me, like as a little kid, the first time like my brother and I started watching Dragon Ball Z and Pokemon. And I remember like it was like to be continued. I remember just my little mind being blown and being like, wait, what do you mean? Because all of us, like so much of American TV shows are one self-contained episode or it's two mini episodes in an episode. Right. This was also just something that was so different for me that like really caught my attention as someone that, you know, did like Harry Potter and did like anime and was looking for those like bigger, more engrossing stories. Mm-hmm.
That is true. I feel like a lot of American animation is just episodic. And mm-hmm. to be fair, the first season of Avatar is more episodic as it like as the show went on, I feel like it felt more mm-hmm. of like a continuation. But there are points in the show that it's kind of like this episode doesn't need to exist. You know, not that I don't love every episode. I watched cartoons like all up through high school. I was always watching like Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network, but I didn't really watch anime at all until I was in college.
Yeah, I feel like we dragged you into all of that
you
stuff.
Totally
too.
Did. I mean, you know, I watched Sailor Moon and Pokemon and everything like everybody else when I was a child, but I didn't know that they were not American until I was older, because I was like, why would it be not American?
I remember being in third grade and my school, we used to get like Time magazine for kids. Mm-hmm. They had an issue all about Pokemon and they were like, Pokemon is anime. What is anime? And then they were like, it's Japanese. And they were saying how like a lot of these shows are like overarching stories and like there's actual character development. And I remember kind of being like, I understand, like you know, because it's like I couldn't explain why it was different, like I didn't have the words to be like the art style is different. And then like that gave me the language. Mm-hmm. So then that's like with Avatar, I was like, American anime? What are they trying to do? Can they do that? Is that allowed? Because even then, I didn't understand. That's also like a little bit disingenuous too, because so many shows like outsource their animation. Mm-hmm. And especially today too, everything is so much more collaborative and global.
I never thought about it that way. It's just like, I guess when I was watching cartoons, because I have also watched like by that point in time, anime and also Japanese and Korean dramas where it's like, very like you have to follow the storyline from start to finish. Yeah, I just knew that like I was also questioning like why is Nickelodeon doing this? Like are they what are they trying to do by accomplishing this? I was just very skeptical at first. Like can you actually do this and is it gonna be good? So I was definitely approaching it from like you can't take this and like make it your own kind of thing. So I was like, is this like, you know, me at 15 being like anti-colonialism almost, but I was definitely like, this is weird, like this was like my thing that I couldn't talk to like people about who like weren't like other Asian people watching it, right? Like, so
yeah
I never thought about it that way, but it's the first evidence of a series with people developing and things like that. So I never thought about it until now.
I'm glad that 15-year-old Abby was just like giving everybody the side eye and like the creators, because the creators are white guys as far as I know. They're not Asian.
Yeah.
I think that's what also made me suspicious, because it's like, okay, like these non-Asian people like creating this series. So yeah, I was already like, what's going on? What is this?
15-year-old you was already like, you were just like that much farther ahead of than the rest of us.
I guess because I didn't really watch like anime or anything. I didn't think of it like, oh, this is America trying to do anime. I was just kind of like, oh, mm-hmm. this is an Asian inspired cartoon. Like that was the only, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm like yeah. super white and so I didn't think about anything critical like that until I met everybody in college. So
yeah.
It was just kind of like, oh, this is different. And I think that was part of the reason why I ended up watching it. Like, I remember seeing commercials for it before it started, and then I just never actually watched it until I caught it that one time. And I'm like very mad that I don't remember what the first episode was that I saw.
I remember seeing the trailer, and I remember for a second I thought it was like, oh, Nickelodeon bought the rights to an existing anime and they it's a dub. And I remember like, oh, like Nickelodeon's going to start showing anime, because at that point Cartoon Network was really the only, and Warner Brothers, like WB, were the only channels that like consistently showed dubbed anime. Mm-hmm. So I remember at first I was like, oh, like I think they're like, this is like an anime that they dubbed. But then I, you know, watching more, I was like, no, this is like, their mouths are like accurate. You know, I was just like, no, this is like original. Like, that's so weird.
Yeah, I really wish that I had memory of like what was actually going through my head, just because it was such a long time ago. But yeah, like I definitely could see myself thinking the same thing. Like, is this actually a foreign show? And then seeing the creator name, I guess maybe the moment I found out that it wasn't, I was like less inclined, but who knows?
No, and like this makes me want to start talking about the first episode, but we will wait till next week because
we haven't.
Then we'll just, it'll just like the floodgates will just open. Yeah, we also we haven't watched it in like years, I know. So that's fair.
In at least 7 years.
Like, I feel like when you rewatch like an isolated episode, it's like there are certain episodes like people kind of gravitate to, mm-hmm. and it's like you don't rewatch the pilot or like you don't rewatch the first episode.
No, generally not.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys have any closing thoughts or anything.
I'm very glad that we're doing this, because even though, you know, it's been so long and everything, and even though I was also a teenage skeptic who did not watch this show after I saw like one commercial, because I was like, what am I trying to make an American anime? I'm not buying it. I do feel that Avatar: The Last Airbender was such a cultural phenomenon of a show, mm-hmm. that had all these, this really intricate storyline, all these very compelling characters who are so complex and relatable, and they tell all these stories that are really carry with them sort of very important messages and stories for people to see played out on their screens, even while not beating you over the head with it. And I certainly was not thinking about that stuff the first time I watched it, but in hindsight, it's all very important. I feel like there's, I mentioned this to you guys earlier, that I feel like there's an entire generation of people who are kind of like, oh, well, you know, Avatar taught me all the important things in life. Mm-hmm. So this is really a great show, so I'm very excited that we're going to be doing this this podcast.
Yeah, I'm very happy for, like, the excuse to rewatch it. Like, I probably would have rewatched it anyway since it's on Netflix. I mean, there's not really much else going on in my life at the moment.
Fair.
Yeah. But this is, like, a reason, and it's nice to kind of feel, like, justified to watch it again. And like, you know, it was a really big part of my high school freshman year of college life, and sophomore year, I guess. Yeah, so it's like nice to revisit that and then remember like how I felt when I was watching the episodes and like the emotional impact they had on me. So very much looking forward to this.
This is like current gen. This is, you know, 30-year-old gen, I don't care. You know, trying to project onto 15-year-old Jen. When I was watching it, I was aware of that it was willing to go places that other shows had it before. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I'm just like that much more curious knowing just how much more I know from that age, like just to rewatch it and revisit it.
Right.
Because again, for me, it's like as someone who's trying to figure out their own voice in terms of filmmaking and animation and like narrative, this is also just one of those shows that is like a benchmark for me in terms of these stories that mean so much and they do so much. And for me, it's like there's not many things that hit as hard as like Avatar does, to be completely honest. So I'm like really excited. And it's exciting to do something with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, so clearly I am the one least familiar with the series, so I feel that it's going to be very interesting to watch this as an adult, because I think from this point, I've watched a lot of series, whether that's animated or like even American or Asian dramas in general. So I think like having picked up themes, having lived my own life experience, like growing up from adolescent to adult, I think that it's going to be a very interesting perspective to watch like these characters grow up and see the more adult themes that I think the animators were kind of trying to hint at, but you don't really pick up on as a kid. So I'm pretty interested in seeing how us as adults are gonna, you know, view things in a different way.
Thanks so much for listening to Pod Sing Say, an Avatar The Last Airbender podcast. I'm your host, Jen, joined by co-hosts Nicole, Abby, and Steph. Join us next week when we watch the first episode of Avatar, The Boy and the Iceberg.